Welcome and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Improve and Automate IMS Backup and Recovery Using IMS Recovery Expert Version 2.1. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and include a question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how you can leverage storage-based fast replication to create instantaneous and non-disruptive system-level backups. You'll take away details about the unique features in IMS Recovery Expert's Intelligent Recovery Manager to get IMS up and running quickly when recovery is needed using system-level backups and or available recovery assets. The speakers for today's presentation are Margaret Wilson, IMS Tools Market Manager, and Ron Basilia, Lead Software Developer Rocket Software. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our first speaker, Margaret Wilson.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another IMS Tools teleconference call. And I want to just make a little reminder in case you noticed this morning or it might have been too early. We did have another IMS Tools announcement this morning for a new and improved way to do IMS backup and recovery. And the tool that we announced was IMS Recovery Expert version 2.1. And we're very fortunate today that we're going to be able to talk about the tool right away. And we're going to give you some background on the tool and explain some of the techniques. We all realize that IMS recovery is complex and takes way too long to satisfy all of the expectations and demands that our businesses have. So we're going to find out how it can be simplified and the recovery time can be significantly reduced when intelligent recovery managers are being used to automate and use storage-based fast replication activities and procedures. So that's what we're going to cover today. We're going to find out all that good information. And on hand with us to tell us about this new IMS Recovery Expert tool is Ron Basilia. Ron is the lead software developer from Rocket Software. He has worked with IMS for over 23 years, and in the past 19 years has been involved in design, development, and support of a range of IMS tools. He's been involved in the development of database reorganization utilities, propagation tools, database monitoring, analysis solution, and most recently, data replication and backup and recovery products. So we've got the expert here for you today to tell you all about our new IMS Recovery Expert. Ron, welcome, and the call is yours.
Okay, thanks, Margaret, and good morning, everybody. Yeah, as Margaret mentioned, what we're going to talk about today is a new tool, IMS Recovery Expert version 2. And the goal is what we're going to talk about is ways that we can use this tool to help improve and automate the traditional backup and recovery processes that we've been used basically since IMS has been available. And we're going to talk about how this tool can leverage some of the fast replication storage that has been available and some of the capabilities within that storage to improve and reduce some of the backup time and reduce some of the recovery time. So let's go ahead and get started here if we want to move to slide 2, which is the agenda. And basically when we start out, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the trends that we see with large DBMSs and some of the trends with what's happened with some of the fast replication storage that's available. Then we're going to start talking a little bit more about IMS Recovery Expert version 2 and some of the different components within IMS Recovery Expert version 2. One of the things that IMS Recovery Expert version 2 brings to the table is a thing called a system-level backup. And a system-level backup is something that comes from the DB2 world, which has been available, I believe, since DB2 version 9. And we're going to talk about how IMS Recovery Expert version 2 implements this in the IMS environment. Then we're going to talk about a couple of intelligent recovery manager components of IMS Recovery Expert. One is a what we refer to as an intelligent recovery manager, which helps manage all the complex different scenarios and different utilities and different recovery resources to help you recover different applications or individual databases. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the intelligent disaster recovery manager. And what we mean by the intelligent disaster recovery manager is that it actually does things to help you prepare at a local site for a disaster and also manages and simplifies a remote site recovery if that were to be needed. And after we get through the different components with IMS Recovery Expert, then we'll talk about some implementation and usage considerations of using a system-level backup methodology. Okay, let's go to slide 3 here and just start out with a little bit of trends and directions and what we see. So basically, over the last 10, 15, 20 years, what's happened to a lot of applications that we use DB2 and IMS4 is that they require a lot of availability, and some of this may be because we've web-enabled these applications or customers expect more or whatever, but this is something that DBAs have had to work with now. And then part of this DBA's task is that they need to find backup and cloning type processes that they can do these backups in a very fast and non-intrusive way so that the applications can continue to run. Another problem that the DBAs are tasked with these days is looking for a recovery utility to not only handle the complex recoveries, but also to do it in a much quicker way so that if an application or database does need to be recovered, that they can bring it back online very quickly. Even though we have these problems, what we still see is that most of the backup recovery and cloning solutions that are available today really do not leverage storage-based fast replication or fully take advantage of the capabilities that these type of storage systems are offered today. What we do see, though, is that these storage-based fast replication facilities are being used by storage organizations, and they're mainly being used to address business continuity problems or solutions or provide solutions in that arena, such as disaster recovery. What we have not seen, though, is there's not very many tools or very uses by DBAs to do DBA-type tasks such as backup and recovery. And part of the reason that we believe that we don't see this happening is that there's really not a lot of what we call storage-aware database products available. And this is kind of where IMS Recovery Expert version 2 fits in. And what it's really allowing DBAs to do is really allowing a DBA to use the fast replication services that are available that companies have invested in and to do it in a safe and transparent manner. And part of that is that, if you think of the safe and transparent part, is part of it is that storage organizations tend to not allow DBAs to use those type of services because the APIs or the commands or whatever to drive this type of functionality is usually pretty complicated, and they may not understand the underlying structure or implications that using those facilities may provide. So anyways, part of what these storage-aware database products can provide is that it provides a DBA the capability to do fast and non-intrusive backups. We'll show how it can be used to speed up the recovery and reduce the recovery time, and also we'll talk a fair amount about how it can greatly simplify what we view as traditional type disaster recovery procedures. Go on to slide 4 here, and this is kind of a diagram of what we're talking about of a storage-aware database tool. If we look at the circle at the bottom, this is really what we see today is in the storage administration or business continuity domain, and they are using fast replication to copy DBMS's large amounts of data. And then up the circle at the top here, we have what we refer to as a DBA domain, and they're very DBMS knowledgeable, and they have to do things like local backup and recovery, cloning, and things like that. And if we look at this intersection in the middle, this is where we see storage-aware database tools fitting in. And what it does, it has DBMS knowledge, and it has fast replication knowledge. And what it does is it provides a DBA the capability to perform things like backup, recovery, cloning, disaster recovery, or disaster restart safely and transparently using these type of facilities. Okay, slide 5 here. So if we're able to provide a solution where a DBA or a DBMS is allowed to leverage storage, there's many advantages that can be gained from that. One is we can now use fast replication to reduce the backup recovery and cloning administration costs. Part of it is by automating those type of processes, and part of it is by the sheer amount of reduction in time that it takes to do those type of things. Another advantage is we're able to offload all the CPU and I.O. it takes to do those type of processes, so it's no longer host-based CPU and I.O. We're leveraging or utilizing the fast replication storage substance that we have there to do those type of works. And if you think about how many backups that we have to run on a regular basis, this could end up being a lot of resources that we can move out to the storage processors. The way fast replication works is that to somebody on the host requesting a fast replication data movement type thing, is that it looks like that data movement happens instantly. So if we're using fast replication to perform backups or to create clones, basically it's going to happen instantaneously. So we have a reduction in time, and also any type of outage that we have or impact to an application is basically non-noticeable. We can also use fast replication for restore processes, and once we restore a data set or data sets, we are able to immediately start the recovery processes after we've requested fast replication to restore that, so this is greatly going to reduce our recovery time. We can go into a little more detail on the disaster recovery or restart operations, but basically by using a software tool to drive fast replication, and we'll go into what a system-level backup is, we're able to use a system-level backup and gain the ease of operations that is very similar to remote site replication with GDPS or something like that today. Okay, let me move on to slide 6 here. So basically, as Margaret mentioned, is that as of this morning, IMS Recovery Expert version 2 was announced and will be generally available very soon. And it is into a classification as similar to IMS Cloning Tool, what we refer to as a database and storage-aware backup tool, and this falls in the backup and recovery arena. Let me move to slide 7 here and start out with a couple of definitions. So we're talking about backup and recovery, but it's important to understand the different use of these three terms here as I'm using this throughout this presentation. One is restore, and basically what happened here is we're driving fast replication. Fast replication really doesn't know about recovery. It's basically moving data sets or volumes of data at a time. And so part of driving fast replication, we're going to be actually restoring data sets as part of the recovery process. Then if we talk about a recover, basically what we're doing here is that we have a data set, whether it be an image copy or something that we've used fast replication type movement for, and then we're going to apply logs to that data set. So that's what we refer to as recover. And then restart, we're really talking about restarting an IMS system with all of its databases. And part of restart for using emergency type restart is there is some getting databases back to transitionally consistent point in time. So, you know, keep those in mind as we go through the presentation. We are talking about different things now that we're using fast replication or data set type movement in with recovery. Okay, let's go back on slide 8 here and think about what we currently have today, what we have to back up, and what we're using for local type recoveries and also disaster type recovery. So basically, when we think about backup and recovery, most of us think about we're going to use image copies and create an image copy of our IMS databases. We also have, and maybe this is in the storage group, we also have to worry about where our IMS systems reside and how those get backed up and possibly restored if they need to locally and remotely. And also we have a lot of what we term application libraries like ACB Libs or PGM Libs or something like that. But those, especially in a DR type of recovery, also need to be backed up and shipped to the site that they're going to be needed at. Part of one of the things that's helped solve this is remote mirroring, which we have XRC or PPRC or EMC's SRDF. And basically here what we're doing is we're basically taking everything that we have at one location and replicating it to another location. It works great. It's typically used for disaster recovery. It's fairly expensive as far as implementing. But basically as far as DR is that everything is shipped over there automatically. And then if we need to restart at our remote site, it's really just a matter of restarting IMS. Now with IMS Recovery Expert version 2, we have a different way, or we're introducing a different way to back up all this type of data, your IMS databases, your IMS systems, your application libraries, to back all that up, to include that into what we call a system-level backup. As part of that system-level backup, we're going to drive fast replication, so it's basically a disk-to-disk type copy. We also include procedures to offload that to tape or to cheaper disk, and also as part of that offloading, we can encrypt the data so we can safely transport that to a remote site if needed. We can also offload it to maintain multiple generations of a system-level backup at a local site. As part of this, and one of the reasons we talked about a storage-aware product, is that we also have to keep track of what we've backed up, what volumes it's on, whether we've offloaded it to tape, and where it currently exists. So part of IMS Recovery Expert version 2 is what we refer to as a metadata repository. We keep all the information about the system-level backups and where they reside and what the IMS systems look like in this metadata repository. Okay, let's move to slide 9 here, and let me explain a little bit more about what a system-level backup is. So basically what we're going to do is a system-level backup is a backup of the entire DBMS environment at a certain point in time, okay? So what we're going to do is that we're going to find out all the volumes that an IMS system resides on. An IMS system may be a complete data sharing environment, but we find all the volumes that an IMS system resides on. And at the point in time you tell us to do a backup, what we'll do is we'll drive the APIs and the storage processors to make a fast replication copy of all the volumes that contain IMS system data sets on, whether it be database data sets, application libraries, or system data sets. The backup basically completes in seconds or even sub-seconds. So IMS, it really just kind of looks like a hiccup, we're going to basically freeze IMS at a certain point in time, create the backup, and then let IMS continue on. We do it at the volume level because the volume level backup is significantly faster than individual data set copies. And that's assuming that just, you know, a fair amount of data sets on each line. But basically that's what's happening is that system level backup is being done at the volume level, preferably with fast replication, and it's done very quickly. The system level backup is done basically without affecting applications. As I said, it looks like a little hiccup. We don't have to DVR any databases. We basically just, and we'll talk about this consistency point in a second, we basically just make it look like a power outage, do the quick, fast replication, and then IMS is back up and running. And so there's really a lot of things that can gain from here. You know, all the elapsed time that we've done as far as taking image copies, taking our application down to create those, we're able to gain all that time back and extend some processing windows. So I talked a little bit about the data consistency point here down this bottom bullet, and basically there's a couple different ways to do that. We're going to make the system level backup look like a power outage happened, and then we went and copied all the data at that point in time. And there's two ways that we can do that. There are some vendors that contain fast replication storage or provide fast replication storage, and also part of those APIs are that we can drive those APIs and say, okay, we want to create a consistency point in time across several hundred volumes at one point in time, and it will basically freeze I/O against all those volumes while we do the copy in a second or so, and then we can unfreeze those I/Os and IMS continues. If we don't have that hardware available, we also provide a software database suspend process where basically we're going to get in there and we're going to say, okay, we need to create a system level backup. We're going to communicate to all the IMSs that we're backing up or in that data sharing environment to say, okay, basically suspend I/O for a second, let us create the backup, and then go and continue on. So we don't have to stop the BMPs or DVR the databases or stop IMS or anything like that. It just happens right then and there. Okay, let's go on to slide number 10 here, talk about how we perform a system-level backup a little bit more. So what we do is part of IMS Recovery Expert version 2 is the process what we refer to as IMS Discovery. And basically when a system backup runs, before we're going to actually create a backup, we'll go out and validate that our backup is going to contain every data set that belongs to that IMS environment. So say you've added some new databases and they've expanded onto different volumes or SMS has put them somewhere, is that we'll validate to make sure that we're backing it up. If we're not going to be backing it up, then the backup is not going to occur and that backup job will fail. We also provide all facilities to manage and recall, if needed, all the backups to, as I mentioned, to tape or to cheaper disks. And as soon as the backup is created, we can then offload it to tape if need be or create multiple copies or maintain, I think it's up to 99 different generations of a system-level backup. And some of it can be used for local type recoveries if we want to offload for that. If we want to create another offload copy, which we can do at the same time, we can actually use an offload copy to ship to a disaster remote site. Also, we'll talk about, too, is that we're talking about a system-level backup. It's important to keep in mind that most people, at least on the DB2 side, have used this concept in combination with image copies. So it's able to reduce some image copies, but it's also you're going to use image copies as well for certain types of backups. And when we get into the recovery, we'll explain how the Intelligent Recovery Manager will determine whether to use a backup from a system-level backup or possibly from a more recent image copy. Okay, let's go to slide 11 here. A lot of different things going on here. And what we're basically talking about now, okay, we've created a system-level backup, and it's important to remember that there's two types of recovery we're talking about now. So we can recover an entire IMS system, and that would be all your IMS data sets, if you wanted to, and all the databases that belong to that IMS system. Or we can go talk about an IMS Recovery Expert version 2 can perform what we refer to as an application recovery. An application recovery can be a group of related databases and their indexes. It can actually be an individual database or even an individual database data set, if that makes sense. So what happens is when you run the Intelligent Recovery Manager component of IMS Recovery Expert, it actually determines where the backups are. Okay, it looks at DBRC, it looks at the system level backups that may be on disk, it looks at what's been offloaded to tape, and whatever recovery point you're going to or want to recover to, it will pull the resources from where that system level backup exists, or if a more recent image copy is available, it would drive that as well. I mentioned earlier that one of the benefits fast replication provides is faster recovery, is that typically a very significant amount of the recovery process is the amount of time that it takes to restore an image copy. Well, now, if we have a system level backup on disk, still resides on disk, we can flash that back to the source volume instantaneously and immediately begin the application of the processing of the log records that we may need to apply after that data set's been done. So an important point to remember here is that we can create one system-level backup, flash that to other volumes, fast replication volumes, and then we can take that system-level backup and use it to restore an entire IMS system locally or remotely, restore an individual application or applications or an individual database, and also we can use that same system-level backup, offload it, and ship it to a remote site for disaster recovery. Okay, slide 12 here talks about the disaster recovery component of IMSRE, or how a system-level backup can be used to greatly simplify disaster recovery. And there's two different modes here that we see. One is that if you're going to use a system-level backup as part of disaster recovery, is that it basically by itself is a restartable IMS system. So basically, if you were to take that system-level backup, restore it at your remote site, you can emergency restart IMS, and that's all that's needed to bring that IMS system up and running. So greatly simplified, and it's basically the same simplification that's provided by remote mirroring through GDPS. It's basically that's the same type of thing. There's a little more time to restore the volumes, but as far as restarting IMS, everything is there. You have all your IMS systems, you have your application data sets, and you have all your database data sets. And the only thing that you need to do is restart those volumes, and you can restart IMS. The other part of disaster recovery is that you can also use the system-level backup as a starting point. Say maybe you've only created a system-level backup once a week or something like that, and you ship that off-site, and then you're going to continue to ship archive logs off-site. Okay, this will give you a more current recovery to time. This is what we call system-level backup and roll-forward type of recovery. The intelligent disaster recovery helps you in that way, in that it helps you prepare all your recovery assets. You tell IMS recovery expert whether you want to use archive logs, whether you want to use change accumulations, whether you want to use your image copies, whether you're going to be shipping those to the remote site. And it actually prepares a recon that has all that information in it, prepares all the recovery procedures to roll forward or apply all those type of updates. So basically that would be a step. So your restart at the remote site this time would basically be say, okay, I'm going to restore my system level backup. I'm going to run this JCL that IMS recovery expert has already created to recover all my databases to my current point in time. And then basically I'm going to warm start or cold start IMS at that point in time. So greatly simplified restart procedures at a disaster recovery remote site. Okay, slide 13 here is that another benefit of using a system-level backup is that it can reduce some recovery costs. And the reason that we say that, or the benefit that you gain from here, is that we can create one system-level backup, and then it can be used for whatever type of recovery you may need to use it for, which is local system, local application, or disaster restart and recovery. It also leverages your storage processors. A lot of companies have investments in fast replication type storage. What we mentioned earlier is really only being used for business continuity type solutions. Well, this now is going to use that investment to offload some of the CPU and I.O. from the host processors. And again, because we're driving and automating the fast replication capabilities and also have a metadata repository to keep track of where system-level backups are, or what devices that they're on, it provides a way for DBAs to safely and transparently use these services that fast replication has to offer. And the other thing to mention, too, is that there's several companies that actually exist and provide hardware support in this arena, and we provide APIs into all those. So if you're not necessarily tied to one type of storage, you can still use the system-level backup with fast replication facilities that you have. Okay, let's move on to slide 14 here. I just wanted to mention this real quick, is that there is another storage-aware database tool that we have, which is IMS Cloning Tool. And there is some synergy in between IMS Cloning Tool and IMS Recovery Expert version 2. And here basically is a diagram which shows that we can create a system-level backup. And a system-level backup is going to be offline because the volumes are all the same. It's basically an exact copy of the source volumes. So we have all the information there, but those are offline volumes, really not doing anything unless we needed those volumes for recovery. So what we can do with the cloning tool is the cloning tool can actually create clones or multiple clones from film that system level backup. Later on in the presentation, we have a little more detail about how this can be used with some additional more recent enhancements that they made to the fast replication hardware storage devices to create a lot of clones without using a whole lot of storage. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Okay, we've talked a lot about a system-level backup. Let's move on here to what the Intelligent Recovery Manager component. So if we can move on down to slide 16 here. So basically, the Intelligent Recovery Manager component of IMS RE is going to manage all the local recoveries for you. And what happens here, and we'll give some examples in a second, is that it's actually going to drive all your recovery, whether it be recovering from an image copy, whether it be rebuilding indexes, whether it be restoring a data set from a system-level backup, whether it be on disk or tape or wherever it may be. It's going to do all that in a very efficient manner for you. It actually is a single-point interface into the IMS backup and recovery tools like IMS Recovery Solution Pack for you. It's an ISPF-driven type of interface, so you can actually define all your applications and generate your JCL for recovery all through an ISPF interface, and it will drive all your different utilities that may need to be needed to perform the recovery on the back end. So I think that it greatly simplifies and automates the recovery process. It reduces the amount of knowledge that's needed to create complex JCL. And the way that it does this is that if you build a JCL, and this JCL can be built in advance because it really never needs to be changed, because what's going to happen is the Intelligent Recovery Manager is going to go look at the time of execution. It's going to go look at what the most recent recovery assets are, what the state of that database or index is, and then based on what information you had previously provided through the ISPF interface on the utilities, it will drive all those utilities or restore data sets from a system-level backup to bring it to the point in time that you requested. And again, that all happens at runtime, so you don't have to, depending on when you're running your recovery JCL never changes. Let's go to slide 17 here, and this is kind of a little pictorial of what actually happens when you execute the IMS Intelligent Recovery Manager component. So what it's going to do, it's going to go out and look at the IMS RE metadata repository for information about system-level backups that have been created and the database data sets that are on those system-level backups. It's also going to go look at the recon data sets to look at the current state of those data sets, and then it's going to determine what the most efficient way is to recover the data sets that you've defined in this application profile. And if we start on the left-hand side, this may include restoring data sets from the system-level backup, so it's going to do that for you. It will also do any DBRC notifications, such as indicating that a recovery is needed for a DDB area or something like that. It will put the database data sets in a position that the other utilities need to be run. Then if you've told it that you wanted to run a change accumulation prior to run recovery, it can drive HPCA to create that change accumulation. If you want us to drive DRF, we will drive DRF. If you want us to create index builder as a separate step, we will create IAB as a separate step. If you want us to invoke the HLDB ILDS primary index rebuilder, we can do that, or we can have index builder redo that, or we can have DRF build those. And also after the recovery is completed, if you want us to drive HPIC and HPPC to create an image copy and validate those data sets, we can also do that. And what ends up happening is that you submit this one job, this one JCL that I mentioned never changes. All the analysis is done at execution time, and then this is from a single job, and then the IMS Intelligent Recovery Manager will actually spawn batch jobs to run these processes as needed and then bring everything back into a single point. So it's all managed from a single point of control. Okay, let's go down to slide 18 here. And this is something that's a little bit different than normal recovery. Okay, we're talking about a system-level recovery. And this can be local, and this can be remote. Okay, typically most people think of system-level recovery as part of a disaster recovery. But IMS Recovery Expert version 2 also allows you to bring an IMS system locally back to a certain point in time. Okay, this will be all the IMS system data sets. And there's two types of system-level recovery. One is a full DBMS restore. And a full DBMS restore is going to bring everything related to the IMS system back, including the active and archive logs, the recon, the ICF catalogs at the point in time the system-level backup was created, and also any control data sets that are needed. And basically from here, what's going to happen, you can either do a restart of that IMS, which will bring you back to the time of the system-level backup, or you can tell IMS Recovery Expert to first restore my full DBMS, but then also forward recover it to a certain point in time, and it will drive all the recovery processes before restarting IMS. The other flavor of a system-level recovery is what we call a data-only system-level recovery. And what this means is that it's going to not restore your IMS system data sets. It's only going to restore volumes that contain your IMS databases and indexes. And I'll explain this a little bit further on. This basically requires your IMS databases indexes to be on volumes that do not contain other IMS systems, because we're going to restore them at a volume level, because restoring that amount of data at a volume level is a whole lot quicker than bringing back all the data sets. So that's called a data-only recovery. We don't necessarily have to bring IMS back to everything, but we can restore all the database volumes and then run forward recovery. Since we still have your IMS recon and active and archive logs and all that, you can run forward recovery to bring those databases up to state and then restart your IMS that way. So there's a full DBMS restore, system-level restore, and a database-only system-level recovery. Another flavor of recovery, to move on to slide 19 here, is what we call application recovery. An application we refer to as a group of related databases and index. It can also be an individual database or data set, as I had mentioned here. And a couple of different options. Typically, if you wanted to recover the current, you can do that. If it's just a timestamp, this may be one case that you would have to change your recovery JCL, because you'd have to go in through your ISPF interface and give us the timestamp you wanted to recover to. Actually, the JCL would still be the same, but it would require you to do something if you're recovering to a different timestamp. But we can support either recover to current or recover to timestamp. So what happens with application recovery is that in advance, you're going to go in and define your application. And what your application really is just a group of databases. And I have a slide in a second that kind of shows this. And it can be wildcard driven to select multiple databases. And we can also support other DBRC groups. So if you have existing DBRC groups defined, you can tell us what those DBRC group name is, and we'll include all those databases and index within that application. And again, all that's done prior to doing any type of recovery, so at recovery time, all that stuff is not needed to be done. Okay, then what you want to do for application recovery is that you can also build JCL to recover the application in advance, okay? And basically, it's going to look the same, because at execution time, we get all the information out of the metadata repository that you've defined through the ISPF interface. And what it's going to do there is it's going to go look at what the most current resource is, try to determine what the most efficient recovery is, if that's what we're doing is recovery, and to drive all those processes to perform the recovery. Let's go to slide 20 here, and this basically is a screenshot of how you would define an application profile, and we just have three different entries in here. And so within this application, if we look over here on the bottom left-hand side where it says type, GC stands for, it's a group definition, it's a DBRC group, and it's a change of cum group, okay? And so what here, we just basically give it the change of cum group that's defined in the recon, and at execution time, we'll go get that group, expand it to all the databases and data sets that need to be recovered, and perform recovery on those as well. And then below the line that says type GC, there's two entries for DB, which is database type, and we can include individual databases, or it kind of shows that we can include everything using some wildcards and stuff like that. So right now, if we wanted to run recovery on this application, it would actually recover all the databases and the data sets that belong to that DBRC group, as well as that meet the masking for DBHI asterisk and also DBHT002. Let me go back to slide 20 for a second. Is that one of the options here says, okay, update recovery options. And typically, you'll set up defaults when you initially configure and install the product. But if you need to change them for a particular application or for a particular instance of recovery, you can actually go into update recovery options. And then if we go over to slide 21, this is the panel that will bring up the different recovery utilities that you want to use to recover this application. And you can see there's a couple different recovery points. You can drive a recovery point ID to give you consistent times for all the databases or data sets within this application if you want to do a timestamp type recovery. We can do a verification of assets before recovery if you want to do that. And then you give us information about all the different utilities. And again, I mentioned you just use DRF. We can do a separate index rebuild utility, drive the IMS LDB utility, change the cum, and image copy. Also, if you look down here, is that it says recovery resources, that typically you'd want us to determine if you have a system-level backup or an image copy, which is the case where we specify all. We'll go look at the most recent one and use that. But if you wanted to limit it to just an image copy or an SLB, say one of them had an error or whatever, then you can also tell us only look at this type of resource, you know, to perform this recovery. Okay, let's go to slide 22, and this is kind of just a pictorial of what actually happens here. And so, again, you're going to create an application profile through ISPF, and that's going to be done in advance. You can update or define the recovery options if you want us to, and specify what recovery to point. And then there's a ISPF command that says build the JCL. From that JCL, you can take it and save it in a PDF, and you now have all the JCL that you need to recover all the databases and all the data sets defined in that application at whatever time that you need to run the recovery. And then if you do need to run the recovery, what you can do is you can execute the JCL, and that's going to invoke the IMS Intelligent Recovery Manager. He's going to analyze what needs to be done to run the recovery and then start driving all the processes that need to be done. And we see over here on the right-hand side, if part of that, if we have a system-level backup, part of that, and the most recent is a system-level backup, we can drive the fast replication commands to bring that data sets or the data sets back very quickly and then start running the other recovery utilities while the storage processors are bringing all that data back to the volumes that we told it to. Okay, let's go to slide 23 and then slide 24. We're going to talk about the Intelligent Disaster Recovery Manager component of IMS, the Recovery Expert. So basically, look on slide 24. We're going to talk about the Intelligent Discovery Manager works both locally and remotely. So we realize that part of disaster recovery planning and preparation, a lot of that work occurs at the local site. And so what you're going to do, you're going to go through your ISPF interface, you're going to define a disaster recovery profile is what we call it. And basically you're going to tell us in there what recovery assets you want to use and what your desired recovery 2-point is at the remote site. If it's just a system level backup, then what ends up happening is that you generate, once you've defined a disaster recovery profile, you'll generate the JCL to run the Intelligent Disaster Recovery Manager preparation utility locally at the local site. And what this preparation utility does is it goes out and looks at all the recovery assets that have been created basically since the last time that the preparation utility ran, but it looks at what's current, okay? So if you have archive logs or whatever, it accumulates all that. Then it looks at what you defined in the disaster recovery profile. Do you want these recovery assets to be used at a recovery at the remote site? And then what it does, it creates, and some of the options there is like, okay, I want to use archive log 2, I don't want to use change accumulations, I want to take a change accumulation and create a copy of it, I only have one image copy, I want to keep that for a local site, but go ahead and copy that image copy to ship to the remote site. Whatever those recovery assets are, it will then create a recon that has all that information in it, so the only thing that really needs to be done at the remote side is to restore that recon, and it knows what recovery assets are out there. So that's preparation at the local site. Oh, and let me back up one other thing, too, is that part of that preparation is that it actually creates a single PDS. And in that PDS, we put the backup of the recon into it. We also put a backup of the information we need out of the metadata repository to run at the remote site. And also, it creates all the JCL that's needed to run all the steps at the remote site to restart your IMS, whether that be at a system-level backup point or whether it be at a more current point, such as at the end of the last archive log. So all the information is included in the PDS, and the only thing that really needs to be done besides transporting all the offloaded tapes from the system-level backup image copy and stuff like that is to actually take that PDS and get that shipped to the remote site as well. That, again, greatly simplifies the stuff that needs to be done at the remote site for disaster recovery. So we go to slide 25 here, and I kind of already covered a lot of this. Is that so basically when you create your disaster recovery profile, you need to determine or specify what my desired recovery 2-time is. And based on what your desired recovery 2-time is that that's when you're going to want to run the local site preparation utility because that will actually prepare everything and create that recovery PDS at the time that it runs. So again, if we look at the bottom here, that kind of talks about all the different things it does. It creates a copy of the production recon based on what you've told it as far as what you're going to ship over there. It updates that recon with that information, possibly creates additional copies to ship to the remote site for you. And then also it's going to create this PDS that needs to go to the remote site with all the recovery JCL. It also puts the metadata repository and the backup of the recon into that PDS as well. Okay, let's go through slide 26. So this is the simplest form of what we call a disaster restart. And this basically, as far as operational complexity, is besides restoring the system-level backup, is the exact same as if you had remote replication, GDPS type of replication. So basically, when you get to the remote side, if you're recovering to the last system-level backup, what you're going to do is you're going to restore your IMS Recovery Expert PDS that it created at your local site. Okay, and that's the only thing you have to do outside of IMS Recovery Expert. You have to get that data set PDS restored. From there, the JCL to restore your IMS Recovery Expert repository will be in that PDS. You need to execute that. It will actually restore the IMS repository. Then the next step would be to run the JCL to restore the system level backup. Okay, the JCL is already in the PDS. You submit it, restore the system level backup. From there, the only thing left to do is to emergency restart IMS. And since we have all the IMS system data sets, all the ICF catalogs that have all the information about the IMS system data sets, all the IMS your application libraries, everything's at a consistent point in time as if it were a power failure, emergency restart, and you're up and running. Okay, let's go to slide 27, and this is a steps to, again, we're going to refer to it as a disaster restart, because really all the processes of bringing everything up to current is all automated and managed by IMS Recovery Experts. But basically what's going to happen here, again, you need to restore the IMS Recovery Expert PDS first, and that will contain JCL to run all the additional steps to get your IMS up and running, and that includes restoring the repository again, which contains information about the system level backup that's over there. It has JCL to restore your system level backup, including all the data sets needed for your IMS environment. And by the way, is that going back to the scope of a system level backup, if you just happen to have a data only or a database only type of system level backup, it can handle that as well. In other words, if you already had an IMS system there ready and waiting for a disaster, you can do that, and we can just restore the database data sets. Again, going to step number four, what happens is that now we've created a recon, which is more current than what was on the system level backup, but it already has all the data sets that are being used at the remote site, so we'll restore that recon at the remote site. And basically, even though this is at the remote site, we're going to have the same JCL to run the Intelligent Recovery Manager to recover all the databases for that IMS environment to the point in time you've told us. And from there, we can then cold start IMS, and so we take care of taking out any subsystem records, closing the logs, stuff like that. So, again, it runs recovery to the current point, but it's really just running these steps and restarting at the remote site, so it greatly simplifies recovery at a remote site. Okay, that's pretty much the different components that make up IMS Recovery Expert. We're going to go into a little more detail about usage and implementation considerations about using this system level backup, because it is a little bit different than an image copy. Some of it does require you to have maybe your databases isolated from your system data set and stuff like that. So let's talk about some of those things and how we can implement it, and then also ways that we can use it to provide more benefit. So one of the things we need to consider before we get started on this is that how will this system level backup be used? Is it going to be used for local system recovery? Possibly. Used for local application recovery? Possibly. Used for just disaster recovery? Okay, three different types of uses, same system level backup. We need to determine that prior to getting started. Then we're going to look at it and say, okay, are we going to include the full IMS environment? Or do we just need just the database data sets, just the databases that we're going to use it for? And also, which we'll explain in a minute, there's another concept called a partial system level backup, where maybe we don't want to include all the database data sets in that system level backup. We can just back up an application or whatever. We can do that as well. So that's the type that we need to consider. How often are we going to be creating this backup? Again, it's not, you know, size more than a probably a noticeable hiccup in IMS. The idea is that you could probably run these fairly frequently, so we need to determine that frequency. And also, what type of fast replication type storage do we have? Do we have enough around? Can we offload to tape quickly? Stuff like that. Disaster restart, we need to determine what our recovery point to, what is acceptable for the business, and understand that before we get in. And then also we need to have, when we talk about copy-based selections, that we need to at least have a knowledge of what vendor's hardware and what type of hardware that we have, and that's really the extent of knowledge that we need to know. Once you've told us that, is that all of our operations that we need to do as far as data movement, we will use the appropriate API based on what vendor you've told us. Okay, if we go down to slide 30 here. So basically I mentioned that we're doing volume level type data movement, okay? Not that big a deal except for the fact that maybe you need to have your data sets on a certain number of volumes for the backup. But where that poses the problem, though, is that if we're going to do volume level restores, which we do if we're restoring the entire system, okay, we're also going to be bringing back potentially non-database data sets on those volumes. That may be a good thing, because in other words, we can include other data sets besides just IMS on that volume, but it may be a bad thing, and we need to understand that. If we're using the SLB just for application or database recovery only, all the recovery or restores that we do are all at a data set level, so we don't need to worry about the data recovery isolation at that point in time. For using a system level backup for disaster restart or recovery, we may need to worry about system isolation to the extent of, again, we're going to be restoring volumes at the remote site. So we may be restoring non-database data sets, which may be a good thing, may be a bad thing, but we need to understand that. And also we're going to be restoring user catalogs. So they're going to be restored to a certain point in time. So if there are other data sets within those user catalogs, we need to make sure they're either on the system level backup and we want them on the system level backup, or they should be isolated. And here's a diagram here on slide 31. This is what we're talking about data set isolation. And again, we provide a utility through ISPF to actually go in and look at all this information and give you information about whether it's isolated, what type of recoveries or restores that we can run based on your current isolation. So we have ways for you to figure all that out and tell you what recovery can be used for. And also, this is part of our backup validation as well, is that prior to actually running the backup, we'll go out and discover that this is part of the backup job. We keep that information in the metadata repository, and we're only going to allow recovery or restore operations based on what your data isolation environment existed at the time of the system level backup. But the picture that shows is the most stringent. And again, this is for a local system recovery only, okay? So in other words, if you want to bring your IMS system back to a certain point in time, and this could be a full or a database, is that what you need to do is make sure that your IMS recovery structures, which would be your recons and active and archive logs, are on different volumes than your database data sets. So that way we can restore just the volumes that have your database data sets on. Your recons and archive logs will still be current, and we can then run recovery. So again, this is only if a local system restore is being used, because we're going to restore your database volumes at a volume level. If we go to slide 32, this shows the dataset isolation based on if you can use it for local application recovery only. And so here, since everything is done at a dataset level, is that we just make sure that the database datasets are in the system level backup. From there, we can snap them back to whatever, so you don't really need to worry about data isolation at this point in time if you're using it for application recovery only. And by the way, that would basically be the same thing for, you can use that same layout for disaster restart as long as you made sure that the other data sets that we'll be restoring at the remote site that is desirable, that we'll be restoring those as well. So, okay, I mentioned this a little bit earlier, is that there's also another concept, what we call a partial system level backup. And again, this is for cases that I don't really need my entire IMS. It's not that important that I use a system level backup. I have a certain application that's on a certain number of volumes, and I'm going to use a system level backup for that. And what you do is you basically define the volumes that the database data sets are on, and we will only include those volumes in a system level backup. What a system-level backup cannot be used for is for system recovery. Obviously, we don't have all the information in there, so we won't allow you to use a system-level backup for system recovery. What we can do, though, is that we can run application or database recovery or restore from a system-level backup. So this is potentially one use of it. And also, if you have a profile set up to say, okay, I'm going to create system-level backups, it does not preclude you from also creating a full system-level backup that contains all the information, so you can create that maybe once a week, and then you can create your partial system-level backups maybe once a night or something like that. Okay, and slide 34 kind of shows how a system-level backup is implemented and what it's checked for. So we're still going to, you know, because we still have to drive a consistency function, we're either going to tell the hardware or we're going to suspend the IMS while we create a consistent backup. We're going to drive and create the backup at a volume level. So if you look over on the right side here, is that at the top it kind of indicates where our application are, where our data sets, all the volumes that that application resides on, we're going to create a backup for those volumes. And then from there, if you need to recover or restore those, that we'll pull them off the system level backup and basically just restore those data sets or that application. Okay, let's go into slide 35 here. And what this kind of shows is that we want to drive fast replication to create the system level backup so we're not impacting IMS or our applications. But as soon as that system-level backup is done, we can offload that to tape immediately. And once it's offloaded to tape, IMS Recovery Expert is aware that it's been offloaded to tape, so it will allow the same volumes that that system-level backup is created on to be used to create a system-level backup for another IMS environment. So here we show that we can back up IMS 1 to system-level backup, archive it to tape, so we now have the archive. As soon as that archive is complete, we can now run a system-level backup for IMS 2, to the same system level backup volumes off of that tape, and then also repeat that back and forth. So here, we only need one set of backup volumes, and we're able to use it to back up several or many different IMS environments. Let's go down to slide 36 here. And basically, there's a fairly new technology that's been added to the fast replication storage subsystems, and it's a thing called space-efficient or virtual devices. And basically what it is that to MVS or ZOS, it looks like a separate used-to-be or a volume. But what ends up happening through the storage processor is that it doesn't take up any space until either the volume that it was copied from or an update to that volume occurs, and that's when it needs to write the data. So basically you can say, okay, I'm going to create a system-level backup to a space-efficient type volume. And let me give you an example here. So we're going down to slide 37. So basically what we're looking here, let's compare a full-volume copy versus a space-efficient copy or operation. So basically what happens with the full-volume copy is that the amount of storage that's needed in the storage processor is the exact same that's needed from the volume that it's copying from. They do have options in some of the storage processors to say, okay, maintain the relationship from my source and target volumes, and the next time that I go and copy that, only copy the changes that have occurred, the change tracks that have occurred at that point in time. So that's a little bit less data movement within the storage processor, and again, that may be beneficial depending on your update activity in your environment. On restore, everything is done at a full volume level. And at a data set level, if we're using a full volume copy, if we need to restore something back, everything would be done at a data set level. Now, if we go into a space efficient device, what's going to happen here is that when we actually do the copy, no additional space is being used. What happens is that if there's an update to the target volume or update to a source volume, that's when the change track, regardless of where the change occurs, that's where the change track gets saved, and that's the amount of storage that is needed. So if you're reading from the target volume and the track had not changed since the point in time you copied it, it's actually going to get that information from the source volume. So depending on your update activity, how often you're doing backups or how often you're doing cloning, it's potentially a great way to create system-level backups or other IMS environments with using very little additional storage. And again, click on the bottom here. These are the current space-efficient type capabilities that are available and what we support. Let's go to slide 38 here, and this is an example of how you'd be able to maintain a lot of space. So if we look over on the left-hand side, we have fast replication hardware that we're going to do full volume copies with. So we're going to go ahead and create four system-level backups in a day, and we want to keep all those on fast replication hardware in case we need to go back to those at any one point in time. So to back up a 3-terabyte system four times a day, we have to use 12 terabytes of data. Now, if we look on the right-hand side, we're now backing up our system 8 times a day, okay, and say roughly we have a 30% change rate in our source environment. The only space that's going to be needed, we're only going to need enough space to maintain the change tracks, and that really results into about 900 gigabytes. So with a whole lot less storage, we're able to actually back up or create clone copies of our IMS environments a lot more frequently with a lot less storage. Okay, let's look at slide 39 here, and this is an example. We talked about this a little bit earlier, that we can actually, with IMS cloning tool, you can create a clone or a test or a QA or read-only environment from a system-level backup. We don't actually have to use the source IMS environment. And in this case here, what we talk about is that we can actually use the system-level backup, which is an offline, no updates are being written to, and we can create any number of cloned IMS environments from that system-level backup. And then the only storage that we're going to need to create all those environments are basically the updates that are going to be occurring on our cloned IMS environments. Again, depending on what these other IMS environments may be used for, whether it's development or QA or, again, reporting or something like that, we're able to have those environments available to us without using a whole lot of additional storage. And the one consideration down here on the second to the last bullet is that when we go ahead, you know, there may be some automation that needs to be done is when we create a system-level backup to those system-level backup volumes that we're using as the read-only part of our clone environments, we may need to reinstantiate the cloned IMS environment so that they're current with the system-level backup. Slide slide 40 here. This talks a little bit about what storage processes that you currently have. Basically, you just need to kind of understand what you have there, what are licensed. There's some ways like Hitachi. They actually have a Hitachi Shadow Image API that we can drive, or they also have a flash replication interface that they will support as well. A part of this, when you set up a backup profile, you need to kind of know that in advance so that it's set up in the most efficient way. And part of that also determines, if you look at the bottom bullet here, it determines what consistency function will drive in order to create a consistent point in time in order to create a system-level backup. Slide 41, one of the things, there's some industries that have regulations now that you need to maintain tertiary DR sites. This may be an option here. You know, instead of having to provide a full remote replication to a more distant site or another local one, is that we basically have created a system-level backup. The operational complexity to bring that DR site up is basically the same as a fully replicated site, so that may be an option to use that as well, to use system-level backup to provide tertiary DR support. I'm going to kind of go through this real quick here, but this has kind of come up before, is that when we're going to use it in a case that the source environment, if we go back to the previous slide, slide 41, is that we're actually fully replicating an environment here, okay? And we're now introducing fast replication type command from your source and target and back to your volumes. And how does that handle PPRC type environments and what happens there? So basically, we're very aware of the PPRC type environments, and we're going to kind of go through the next couple of slides here. But in slide 43, what ends up happening here is that, and this is an example, if you're running a system-level backup without remote mirror flash copy, is that what's going to end up happening is that when we create a system-level backup, it's going to put the, and also say the target volumes are in the PPRC grouping that they're being replicated as well, it's going to put the target volumes into a duplex pending state until all the data that can be sent from this target volumes over the link to the remote site target volumes. So if we go down to slide 44 now, what happens if you have a PPRC Metro Mirror environment with flash copy enabled? Since we're aware of that, what we're going to do is that instead of allowing the duplex pending state to go in, is anytime that we're driving flash copy commands locally, we'll also initiate the same flash copy commands remotely. So now that you're going to avoid the duplex pending states, and also you're going to reduce a whole lot of traffic that's being sent over a link to the remote site. Okay, on slide 45, again, it's important. We're talking about using system-level backups with volumes that are in XFC or PPRC without remote paraflash copy. So what happens here is that our system-level backup volumes can be outside of a replication group, so we can go ahead and flash to those and create system-level backups. And then as long as we're driving application or database recovery, we will copy everything back using DFDSS with fast replication preferred. And what ends up happening is that they're saying, okay, I'm in a PPRC or XFC environment. I'm going to use DFDSS slow copy, which, again, send all that data over the link, but will avoid the duplex pending. So, again, it's kind of understand that type of environment. We're aware of that, and our utilities will drive their proper functions to alleviate any potential problems. Okay, let me go to slide 46 here, and basically let me just kind of wrap up and kind of highlight what we've talked about. So IMS Recovery Expert Version 2, which is announced today, is a storage-aware database utility that provides a DBA a way to integrate and to leverage the storage processes of today to do DBA administration-type functions. The system-level backup is a great way to leverage these type of functions to provide a fast and non-intrusive backup to help with the availability issues that we have to deal with today. It can potentially reduce a lot of CPU, move a lot of CPU and I.O. off the host processors and utilize the storage processors that we have out there. We can use a single system-level backup for local system recovery, for application or database recovery, and also for disaster restart, so reducing some of the storage requirements that we need. And also by being able to flash back volumes or data sets as part of the recovery process, we're able to reduce recovery time. The Intelligent Recovery Manager simplifies and automates the potentially very complex recovery processes that can be used with or without system-level backups. An integration or migration plan may be to say, okay, I'm going to start, let me look at Intelligent Recovery Manager first, use my existing products, make sure I'm comfortable and that's working, then maybe start using some system-level backups, run some recoveries with system-level backups or image copies, and do that. So it can work with and handle with both, and it's basically whatever you've told us or whatever exists at the time the recovery needs to be run. The Intelligent Disaster Recovery Manager, again, can support either just image copy, change of cue, log type DR, or it can also integrate with system level backup and help simplify your disaster recovery type thing. So basically all these components try to provide a solution to help deal with the very complicated backup recovery scenarios, disaster recovery problems that we have today with less skills being required or less knowledge and less chance for error. That's about all I had, so I'll turn over to the moderator and if there's any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, speakers. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a question and answer session with the presenters. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's conference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference at the right level, press star 1. Not technical enough, press star 2. More technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Would you like to find out how to back up your entire IMS system with almost no impact to the business? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. If not sure or need more information, press star 3. Is the capability to reduce storage costs by utilizing one backup for multiple purposes of interest? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. If not sure or need more information, press star 3. Would you like to eliminate backup windows and extend batch processing windows by eliminating many image copies? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. If not sure or need more information, press star 3. We hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, info is desired at this time, press star 2. And that concludes our survey. Thank you for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. Again, that is star 1. At this time, I will turn the call over to our speaker while we wait for questions. And there are no questions in queue at this time. Again, that is star 1. And there are no questions in queue at this time. I'll turn the call back over to our speaker for any closing comments.
Okay, well, I just wanted to thank everybody for taking time out of the schedule today, and I do appreciate that, and hope this session was informative. Thank you very much.
And that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation.